The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Strong Female Characters. I'm Cher.
And I'm Preeti.
Do you know what today is?
Today? I was like, no.
Is election day.
It is election day.
And I know that everybody went out there and voted, right?
Or if you haven't yet, you probably still have time.
If you haven't yet, stop what you're doing. Get up off your ass and go vote.
Because
the good news for you is that we're portable. You can take us with you to listen while you're standing online to exercise your right to vote and use your voice to actually make a change and make this country better. That's my big vote PSI.
Vote.
Get at me. Rock the vote, people. Because I'm so good at it. I'm amazing. Aside from that, we have some news to talk about. Some of our favorite news stories from the past week, which I feel like every week is crazier than the next.
Yeah. But some good stuff out of this week. There are hints of a Bucky Falcon TV show. There's a question at the end of that because they're so... Like, for me, I'm like, they're so cemented in the MCU. Like, I really liked their dynamic in Civil War.
I love it. Kind of,
like, cantankerous, you know.
Oh, they hate each other, but they love each other.
Secretly. Right. We didn't get a ton of interaction in Infinity War. But I feel like without Cap, what's keeping these two buds together, man?
Okay. I mean, that's one way to look at it.
I feel like I'm going to need a really... And granted, we have Avengers 4 to set this up some more. Mm-hmm. And we don't know what's going to happen there.
True.
I feel like I'm going to need a really compelling reason as to why, like, if Cap dies or whatever happens, Buck and Falcon aren't like, well, okay.
I kind of feel
not
like...
friends.
I kind of dig them being, like, the MCU's answer to, like, Bad Boys.
Sure.
I'm into it. I think they'd be like,
I think they would be really fun to watch on screen together.
Yes.
Like, for sure. I think Sebastian Stan and Anthony Mackie would just have a blast, and we would have a blast watching them. But I need to know the why.
Okay.
Like, it has to be really good. Because otherwise, if I was Bucky, it would be like, peace, I'm out. Got other places to be.
Well, if Iron Fist had to die so that Bucky and Falcon could rise... I'm okay.
We're there. I'm sold. I'm in.
But speaking of people dying, so and death. God, I love this so much. You don't even understand how much I love this. Okay. So a couple weeks ago, somebody put on my radar that there was this woman who last December, she's a British woman, and her name is Amethyst Round, because of course that's her name. Of course that's her name. It's gonna make so much sense as the story
goes
on. It's
so beautiful.
She appeared on an ITV morning show to talk about how she has had, wait for it, sex with over 20 ghosts. Yes. Get it? Live your best afterlife. Well, big, big update for everybody out there that's fans of sex with spirits. She's now engaged to her ghost boyfriend of 9 months. She left, by the way, she had like a real life boyfriend, and I guess she left him for this guy. Or this ghost. Anyway, she described the proposal. She said that, quote unquote, there was no going down on one knee because he doesn't have knees.
Because he's a ghost.
They met in Australia while she was on a work trip, which, I mean.
So it's an Australian ghost?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess what happens in Australia doesn't stay in Australia. But I'm bump.
He's not like tethered to the land?
I don't know. I don't know how this works, but I have so many questions. I want us to interview her in the worst way. Like, I really want to. I have so many questions. But yeah, so apparently he dropped everything, quit his ghost job, whatever he was doing in life, and flew back to the UK with her. And they had sex in the plane bathroom. So they are now, they joined the Mile High Club. I'm wondering.
There's so much happening in this story.
There's so much. Like, first of all, how did he get through TSA is what I want to know. Like,
why would you put yourself through that?
And also,
did you be in true love?
Right. And it's definitely true love because, I mean, I thought that Tinder was bad and, like, you know, that was a challenge. But this is the ultimate challenge, is trying to date somebody that's dead.
How do you?
And a ghost. I want to know, did she have to pay for a plane ticket for him?
No.
Did, like, I mean, there's a lot of benefits to marrying a ghost. Because you probably are saving money on the ceremony and the honeymoon, right?
For sure. Certainly groceries.
You don't have to rent a tuxedo. Yeah, groceries are cheaper. Unless he's like Slimer from Ghostbusters, which eats everything.
Ugh.
Yeah. Yeah, but then, like, I wonder, like, you know how some couples, like, share the bathroom and, like, they'll pee with the door open or, like...
Sure.
Like, what if you want your alone time in the bathroom and, you know, he's a ghost. He can kind of just fly through.
Yeah, but ideally, if they're in love, he respects her boundaries.
This is true.
Can he go corporeal?
Can he what?
Like, can he become, like, solid?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know what his powers are, if he has powers. I feel like we're getting a little too into comic book territory with that. And,
no,
like,
it's not
let's
even
be
comic
realistic.
Book. It's like if you're having sex with somebody...
Right, but let's be realistic. We're talking about a ghost here.
I know. These are my questions.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how the sex with a ghost works.
Right, unless he can become physically, unless he can, like, manifest.
Do you know that it wasn't until, like, very recently that I realized that in Ghostbusters he was getting head from a ghost? Like, I didn't really get the details of what was happening there until, like, a lot more recently than I want to admit. You just know something's happening, but then you're like, you don't know he's getting a beach because you're a kid. I was a kid when I saw that movie.
A beach. I hate that.
I hate it too, but I also hate the fact that as a child, that was in a kid's movie.
Like, that's because it was the 80s and they put anything into children's movies in the 80s. They like did not care.
Okay, so but like speaking of ghosts and pop culture, like who are some hot ghosts?
Okay, actually, two formative ghosts. Like for I think so many women of my generation, mm-hmm. like sexual awakening, like formative. Devon Sawa, like when Casper becomes a real boy, and it's Devon Sawa, and you were like. I don't know, that movie came out in, like, 1994, so I was, like, 10. I was like, that is the cutest boy I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, my God.
Oh my God.
I've never seen Casper, the movie.
There is a, like, literally, Casper becomes a real boy to, like, dance with young Christina Ricci. And he, like, floats her up while they're dancing.
This sounds like Twilight.
Dude, the whole time, Casper is this, like, bulbous, like, white child, like, whatever. And then he becomes Devon Sawa, whose butt we had all just seen in Now and Then.
Okay.
Formative. And the other one is Thackeray Binks from Hocus Pocus.
Oh my God.
I know.
All right.
But he had to go on the list.
My hot ghosts. See now, all right, but he doesn't count as a ghost because I was going to say, like, Interview with a Vampire. They're not ghosts. They're vampires.
Yeah, no, they're vampires because I was also thinking, like, does like, the young Voldemort count from Harry Potter? Horcrux Voldemort? Because he's not technically a ghost. He's a memory.
Yeah.
But he's pretty ghost-like.
Well, Patrick Swayze and Ghost.
Obviously.
Although it are, but you know what, though? I have to admit, the whole Ditto thing is a boner killer for me. I don't think that's hot. And I never thought the whole Clay thing was sexy either. I just thought it was very messy. Like, not in a good way. It's messy.
I can feel the clay under my fingernails.
Exactly. It's messy in the way that people think, like, using chocolate sauce during sex acts is going to be sexy. It's very messy and sticky. And you're just like, why am I doing this? Like, it gets everywhere. It doesn't look the way it does in a movie. I mean, I'm speaking from experience. It's just a very messy, and the cleanup is not worth it. It's not worth it. The payoff is not worth the mess. So that's how I feel.
Forget that clay scene.
Forget that clay scene.
Okay, but Alec Baldwin in Beetlejuice, right?
Alec Baldwin in Beetlejuice. Absolutely. This is before he became this iteration of Baldwin, when he was still the reason why a Baldwin was considered like a compliment, because he was definitely super hot when he was younger.
Super hot.
So yeah, he, you know, Beetlejuice Alec Baldwin could get it. Mm-hmm. But here's one that this is so random that I doubt you ever saw this movie. I don't know why I saw this movie so many times when I was younger, probably because it was like the early 90s and there wasn't a lot of stuff on TV. So you would see the same movie 1,000 times. There was this movie from 1985 called The Heavenly Kid with Jason Gedrick. And the actor that plays the ghost is this guy, Bobby Fontana. And he supposedly in the movie dies in a car accident a la James Dean. You know how like it was like that whole 50s where it's like, oh, you're racing, and then you get into an accident and he apparently dies and he goes to heaven. But apparently like he has to go back because he has to like do something. I don't know. He has to like completely... He has to make something right before he can really get into heaven. So he has to go back to Earth, and he ends up being assigned like this guardian angel type thing to this kid who's a dork. And he ends up like needing, he agrees to like look over him and kind of help him out and help him become cool because he was a nerd. And then you find out like almost towards like at one point in the movie that this kid is really his high school girlfriend's kid, and it's his kid because his high school girlfriend got pregnant.
What?
I know, it's so good. And his high school girlfriend, who's now married, who's the kid's mother, is Jane Kasmarek, who I love because she's awesome. So that's my story.
Is he hot?
I mean, like, he had like the motorcycle jacket and the white t-shirt and the cuffed jeans, like the 50s style. He was like a 50s greaser. Like, here, like, let me find a picture to show you. It's so random. But I'm going to vote for him as like a hot ghost.
Okay.
Because, you know.
All right.
He looked like he could have been a T-Bird.
Is it Frankie Valens in Grease?
Of course he's in Grease. He sings Beauty School Dropout. Yes.
Does he count as a ghost, or is he like an angel?
Of course he counts as a ghost. Both. Because angels are technically ghosts.
So he's kind of a ghost.
He's a ghost. Yeah, I'm going to give it, I think, Bobby Fontana, because, you know, is going to get my vote from the Heavenly. Here we go. This is so good. And the best part is how, like, he's supposed to be... This is so stupid. He's supposed to be in high school, but for some reason he smokes cigars. Like, did that happen in the 50s?
That feels so also wonderfully 80s to me.
I know. It's so weird.
Like, it doesn't make any sense, but...
It makes no sense, but also makes so much sense at the same time. So, this is, of course, taking forever. All right, look at that. Look at that. Come on, Bobby Fontana for the
that's
win.
That's a good chin. I'm sold.
He's sold. Yeah, so that's my vote.
He does not look like a teenager.
He does not at all. He looks like he's 30.
That is a 30-year-old man.
It's absolutely. He's got really good eyebrows, though.
Oh, man.
I feel like he's in something else. I mean, obviously he is. That wasn't the one thing that he acted in his whole life.
There is this episode of Are You Afraid of the Dark?
Okay.
That, again, all of my ghosts are, like, from when I was a kid. What the fuck? Like, what is that saying about me? But it was, like, this episode where there was a car accident, and this kid ends up in a diner, and he doesn't remember. Very vague. I just remember that, like, the whole story is that he's in a diner, he doesn't know why, but it turns out, like, he also died. He and his girlfriend, like, died in the car accident, so he's a ghost the whole time.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he was so cute. And then he ended up on Queer as Folk, which is like one of my favorite shows.
Wait, who is he on Queer as Folk?
Was he
Brian Kenny? Because
no, God, no. Gail Harold would forever and always. No, he was Ethan.
I don't remember who Ethan was.
Who Justin leaves Ryan for Ethan.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's what they talk about. Yeah, okay.
I mean, I hated him on Queer as Folk, but he was super cute.
I have a ghost that I personally does nothing for me, but I guarantee people, when I say it, would be like, oh my God, yes. And if they didn't already say it out loud to themselves or in their head when we got this conversation going, ghost Denny from Grey's Anatomy.
It's what's his face from The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
He is very attractive. He looks like a cross between Robert Downey Jr. and Jeffrey Dean Morgan. Yeah, he's Sam and Dean's dad.
Oh my God, I never ever saw, you know what? Yes, I'm looking at a picture right now. He does look like a little bit like Robert Downey Jr.
And Javier Bardem. They all look like
him
very,
and Javier
very similar.
Bardem, totally. They look like they could be brothers. 100%. The RDJ.
Daddy Winchester.
It's the eyes. They have the same eyes.
And they're all really hot.
Are they? Listen, to each their own.
Well, agree to disagree.
We will agree to disagree. Who else are like hot ghosts in pop culture?
I don't know, man. I don't know. That's my list.
I want other people to tell us. But speaking of, you know, supernatural stuff, another favorite news story this week was that the Satanic Temple wants to sue Netflix and the Chilling Adventures of Sabrina. Not for sullying the good name of Satan, but for its use of their monument to Baphomet, which is a copyrighted design.
Holy crap.
The devil is in the details, and by the details, we mean copyright laws.
Oh, damn, that's good.
The most boring lawsuit ever to involve Satan. The statue is cool as shit, though. It features Baphomet, a deity depicted as having the body of a man, the head of a goat. And he's kind of got that skinny built thing going on, kind of like Ryan Gosling in Crazy Stupid Love, which now all I can picture is him doing the lift from Dirty Dancing. And now we go right back to Patrick Swayze, who's also a hot ghost. Oh my God, synergy. Okay, anyway, but he's wearing a skirt because gender norms are for God lovers. And he's got two fingers in the air like he's flipping Jesus the double bird. And there are two kids looking adoringly at him because Satan is like Wu-Tang for the children. So beyond copyright appropriation, the temple's concern is that Sabrina is inciting satanic panic, the likes of which we, of course, saw in the 80s. Although that's not really what we're getting from the show. Sabrina's version of Satan worship is pretty cool. Like, I'm into it. Like, I would do it. Yeah. So but here's the thing. And I know I'm like totally jumping, but like, so there's the satanic temple and then there's the Church of Satan, and they're two entirely different things.
I did not know that.
Well, if you listened to my other podcast with our friend Gwenda,
Bond, you're calling me out in public like this?
I just called you right out. Do an episode. Actually, Gwenda does like three episodes on different things with Satan, and I kind of started worrying about her a little bit. But we talk about the Satanic Temple because they're bat shit. Well, actually, no, it's the Church of Satan. One of them is like, I forget, the Church of Satan's the OG? I don't know. Anyway, a Satanist does not actually believe in like a Satan or any deity because they're non-monotheistic.
Yeah.
They basically believe like be a good person. You don't have to believe in a deity to be a good person. Yeah. I mean, they do have some weird shit in there, but have you watched Sabrina?
So I watched like I've seen the first like five episodes, I think. And I like it. I like the aesthetic. I love Ambrose so much. I adore Ambrose. He is like the best part of that show. Some of the racial rep stuff is a little troubling, and there have been a few people who have written about this, that, you know, Sabrina's played by Kiernan Shipka. She is half witch, half mortal. And she represents kind of an anomaly and an atrocity to the witches. And so there are these three girls, Prudence and the Weird Sisters, who go to the school that Sabrina is supposed to go to, and they bully her. They're really mean to her. And there is a scene where they pretend like they're going to hang her because of their these 13 witches who were hung in Greendale like ages and ages ago. And Sabrina kind of turns the tide and ends up fake hanging them. Like, there's no rope. There's none of that. But it's not a good look.
They're not white, are they?
No. Prudence is played by a black actress. And it's troubling to me that no one in the writer's room
thought about the optics of
thought about the optics. Yeah. Because it's not, you can't remove lynching from black history.
Or from this country's history.
Or from this country. Right. Black history in America and white history in America. Like, you can't remove this violent action. And so it's really uncomfortable to watch and has rightfully been written about in kind of like a why. And also the idea that it's like this poor little white girl who's getting bullied and then for being halfsies, you know, it's like it's just not, it's like they didn't consider the representation aspect, they just considered the diversity aspect. And they have to go hand in hand.
Right.
So again, I've only seen the first few episodes, so maybe it gets better. I have not seen a lot of reaction to that effect, but we'll see.
I mean, I have never seen the show. I think I saw like one or two episodes of like the original version.
Like but, the TGIF Sabrina the Teenage Witch version? Yeah, but it was like Sabrina. I love Archie comics, so I grew up with Sabrina.
Right.
Like, hardcore. So I was all in on Sabrina the Teenage Witch when it aired on TGIF.
But I've heard, like, a lot of people have been talking about this version of it.
Yeah, it's got good stuff going for it, and it is, like, it is a major, like, the aesthetic kind of show.
Yeah.
The cinematography is really lovely, the costuming and the set design, all of it's really, really lovely. Miranda Otto's in it, and I adore her. You know, it's just, they have to do better.
I feel like one day we'll eventually stop having to say that, but I just don't think that's going to be anytime soon, unfortunately.
No.
But it's interesting how, like, when you think of witches, and it's such a huge, especially this time of year, because we just got off of, you know, Halloween. Halloween was last week. I just sounded like I was like riding Halloween. Like Halloween's like the name of like, I don't know, a horse or a guy.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Sure.
But all this talk about sexy ghosts is getting me worked up.
Woo!
But it's interesting when you think about like the actual feminist history when it comes to witches.
Mm-hmm.
And it's such a popular character for Halloween and just for little girls, you know, and girls. And then like on the opposite of the spectrum, here's a really awkward segue, is princesses, which is a really popular or was a very popular Halloween costume when we were both little. But I think it was last year there was a report how female superhero costumes, especially because at the time I think they had the DC Superhero Girls costumes out, and this was before they had more. I think they actually released, it was last year they released the Marvel, like Miss Marvel costumes and stuff right?
Yeah.
So the last year or two, largely because of those costumes, dressing up as a superhero has for the first time ever, like, outperformed, like more little girls have wanted to dress up as a superhero than a princess, which is awesome and amazing. But it's also interesting when we think about, and I didn't ever really think about this, I don't think it's that I'm like surprised, but until you mentioned it to me, that a lot of people feel like a princess character or a princess is anti-feminist.
Mm-hmm.
And I never thought of that. And I think it's because for me, my two princesses growing up were Wonder Woman and Leia.
Right.
And then the Princess Bride.
Right. You already have like subversions of the princess trope, right? Whereas I think for a lot of people, if you look at so much children's literature, princesses are steeped in needing saving and being passive for, you know, girls and young kids. The iconography of princesses is often hand in hand with like, I'm a princess. And then the boys, sorry, not to gender this, but that is how they market it, is, you know, I'm an astronaut. So it's like one is very seen as very passive and needing help, and the other is actionable and being something that I can see where the sentiment comes from. But it does feel like there's been like a reclaiming of the term princess in a meaningful way all along. A lot of the passiveness comes from classic Disney princess stories.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, you're thinking like Sleeping Beauty, which is about Aurora, but the prince gets all the glory, or Cinderella or whatever it is, right? But even in Disney, they've become more and more active in their own stories.
Progressive, yeah.
Like, my favorite is Meg from Hercules, who I'm not sure is technically a Disney princess, but whatever. But she, the when Hercules meets her, she's like, I'm not a damsel. I'm fine. Have a good day. And that was, like, in 1994. So there's been a movement, I think, to reclaim the idea of princess.
Who's, like, your, who are some of your favorite pop culture prints? I mean, I already, Leia all
Leia's
day.
Leia's a given.
Yeah. I will never not stand Leia. And same with Wonder Woman, who's technically a princess.
Very much technically a princess. My two princesses when I was growing up were Ariel and Jasmine.
Yeah.
Like, Ariel was, that's like the first movie I can remember seeing in the theater is The Little Mermaid.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know what the first movie. I think Jungle Book was the first movie I remember seeing in theaters.
Aww.
I know. I'm adorable. But you have a very interesting interview with...
Yeah, so speaking of princesses and speaking of fairy tales, we are talking to Marissa Meyer, who wrote The Lunar Chronicles and The Renegade series, which is her new book, Arch Enemies, drops today, actually. And we're going to talk about princesses and superheroes. Marissa Meyer, we are here to talk to you, and I'm so excited to have you on. Thanks so much for doing this.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
We're going to have a good time tonight talking about princesses.
Princesses and fairy tales and spaceships?
All of those things. It's almost like we planned it. So first, I kind of want to start off by just asking you what the word princess means to you.
Well, these days I have 2 4-year-old twin girls, and so they're kind of my princesses. When I hear the word princess, my mind immediately goes to my beautiful children. They love playing dress up. I don't know. Kids are amazing how they have so many interests, and they can be super feminine and play dress up and want to put on mommy's makeup and wear tiaras in their hair. And then the next thing you know, they're, you know, battling with swords and pretending to save the world and, you know, defending from sharks in the lava waters. And like, they just have so many wonderful things about them and their imagination. So, yes. Yeah, so these days, that's what I think of when I think princesses.
So multifaceted.
Yes, indeed.
Why do you think that people are so fascinated by princesses? I mean, you know, these stories have been around forever of the damsel in distress or the princess in the tower or whatever it is. What is it about these stories that have had their impact be so lasting? And what is it, do you think, that makes them so ripe for adaptation?
Yeah, so I think a lot of it has to do with kind of that vicarious Cinderella fantasy. You know, the idea of being able to rise in our station into, you know, to become the top of society. And of course, for all of human history, the elite are a very small group. And so whether you're looking up to your royalty and dreaming about, you know, having servants wait on you, or, you know, these days, of course, we don't have royalty here in America, but we, you know, look at our celebrities and think, oh, I want to walk the red carpet, or I want to live in a $1 million mansion. You know, there's always this ideal that we're looking up to. And so, you know, whether it's princesses or, you know, just thinking about our life and what we can dream about our life being, it's a pretty hard fantasy to resist.
That kind of segues quite nicely into talking about the Lunar Chronicles. So Cinder, which came out, you know, 2014, I believe, so a few years ago, but the
2012.
So, oh my god, long ago. time is moving so quickly.
I move so fast.
Those books are amazing, and I love them So, like, I remember being like, oh my God, the next one's out. Oh my God, the next one's out. Like, I can't wait to read it.
Thank you.
But they deal so heavily in remaking the idea of what a traditional fairy tale is and what traditional fairy tale princesses are, which I so appreciate. So what inspired you to take on these characters?
Yeah, so, you know, part of it is that I just love fairy tales and I love fairy tale retellings. And I think that the stories, they, you know, we can still apply them to our times, you know, whether they're dealing with prejudices or good versus evil, or I mean, there's all sorts of themes that we can draw in from these stories. And so I love the idea of doing a series of fairy tale retellings. However, in a lot of the classic versions of the stories, the heroines, you know, what do we know about them? We know that they're beautiful. We know that they're, you know, ridiculously kind and good and never make any mistakes ever. And that to me is really boring, especially to try to follow a character for an entire novel or an entire series. If you're trying to write characters who never do anything wrong, who are perfect all the time, then that just doesn't interest me as a reader or as a writer. And I knew that I didn't want to go the typical damsel in distress route. I wanted to write heroines who, you know, who can think for themselves, who have really admirable skills, who are resourceful, who are smart, and who are willing to go after what they want. And so I kind of took all of those factors together and jumbled it up, and the Lunar Chronicles is what came out of it.
Were you influenced by the kind of the like dark history behind these fairy tales? You know, some of the grim fairy tales are much bleaker.
You could say bleak, yes. Yeah, no, I definitely, the Grimm's fairy tales are really what I grew up on. I mean, I grew up on Disney, like everybody grows up on Disney, but I started reading the Grimm's versions when I was just, you know, 6 or 7 years old. And I loved them. And what kid isn't into gore and violence and curses? And, you know, I was just so shocked by some of the things that were in them. And it kind of gave me this feeling from a young age, like reading something that I wasn't really supposed to. And you know, that always just draws us right in. And so I loved them. I loved the original versions. And then as I got older, I also started looking even beyond the Grimm brothers and Perrault and wanted to read, you know, the versions of the stories from even further back in time or the versions from different cultures. And so I've just kind of been into fairy tales and folk tales kind of my whole life.
Yeah, I did want to actually ask about the idea of different cultures, because princesses are something that exists cross-culturally. You know, there is always that kind of sense of royalty or as we were talking about earlier. And the Lunar Chronicles in particular is a very global story. It's a very intergalactic story, despite kind of the largely Western and European influence of the original tales. Where did that decision come from? Like, why did you decide to make it so open-worlded?
Yeah, so there was a couple different reasons that I was drawn to writing the series that way. One, kind of the overarching reason was that from the beginning, I wanted the problems that are facing the characters to feel like they are problems that are facing everyone on the planet. Like, you're not safe just because you're in America or you're in Europe or you're in Asia. You know, there's this global plague that's sweeping the entire planet. And there's this, you know, these otherworldly people who are wanting to come to Earth and take over and control everyone. And so I wanted to start drawing connections between these characters on all corners of the globe and to show that, you know, no one is safe in this scenario. So that was kind of my main goal for starters. And then when it came to actually choosing what locations I was going to use for the settings, for the most part, I tried to draw an inspiration from some of the old tales. So for Cinder, the oldest known recorded version of Cinderella comes to us from China.
Oh.
Yeah, so it was a story called Ye Shen that was written in or recorded in 8th century China. And if you read the story, like, it's obviously Cinderella. Like, she has a wicked stepmother and wicked stepsisters, and this magical fish gives her a dress and shoes, and she goes to the festival and she meets the king and she loses a shoe, and it's like obviously Cinderella. And so kind of knowing that history of the story, I chose China to kind of pay homage to it. As for, I set Scarlet in France because France has a really rich history in werewolf traditions, and the idea of like a silver bullet being able to kill a werewolf, that comes from France and various other things. So Scarlet was set in France, my Little Red Riding Hood story. And then book three largely takes place in the Sahara Desert because depending on what version of Rapunzel you're reading, sometimes the witch casts Rapunzel out into a great forest or a great wilderness, and sometimes she gets cast out into a great desert. So for me, I think great desert, and of course my mind goes to the Sahara. So that's kind of the story behind how we chose my settings.
But it allows for the story to exist in a very kind of almost like much more accessible way, I feel like, because it makes it feel so big in ways that sometimes fairy tales can feel so limiting is not the word that I want, but smaller, you know, like there are these like kind of tight little stories.
Right, right. And I think a lot of fairy tales, you know, they're related to these characters. This is these characters' story, and it doesn't really involve or affect anybody else outside of that little circle. And that's definitely not the vibe that I was going for.
There is a response to princesses where they are called anti-feminist. What is your response to something like that?
Yeah, I mean, I can understand that perspective. And I think that perspective is based on a lot of very real cultural references. You know, I think a lot of our princess stories, whether they're fairy tales or whether they're Disney movies or even just like the proliferation of princesses in our children's clothing lines and toys. And I think that can be problematic in some ways. And so I can understand that perspective. But I prefer to take a broader sense of what the idea of being a princess is and can be. You know, you can look at it as a, you know, the princess is always under the king or under the prince and she's being controlled. Or you can look at it as a woman who is in a fairly high position of power and maybe has more control over her life. And certainly in my stories and the fiction that I wrote, right, that is the angle that I tend to take.
Who are some of your favorite princesses in pop culture?
Well, Princess Leia is definitely going to be probably number one. She was kind of my idol from the time that I was a little girl. And I actually, we just had Halloween. And I remember dressing up for her as Halloween one year when I was a kid. And, you know, she's just so cool. More recently, I loved what Disney did with Rapunzel's character. I love how quirky and optimistic and what a go-getter she was.
Oh, Tangled was amazing. And,
yeah,
you know, Disney princesses are largely where culturally our understanding of, like, princesses come from. And they've come a long way from where they started, I think. Like Rapunzel. So Rapunzel has magic hair. She's so good at things, you know, she's like you said, she's a go-getter, she's a fighter, you know, she's a survivor. And I want to bring in superheroes because of your new series. Where is that line, you know, with Renegades, it's about superheroes, but where is that line from princess to superhero, and why would they, like, I don't know that we need to define them as two different things.
Sure, of course not. I mean, you know, in the world of the Lunar Chronicles, there are certainly people who you could argue have superpowers, though there isn't royalty per se in the Renegades. There are, of course, people in power, and there's kind of a superhero elite in a way. None of them I would call princesses necessarily, but there is that kind of royalty or elite aspect. So I think that the two can very easily converge.
So talk to me a little bit about Renegades. And so the new book is out as of when this recording drops today, which is so exciting.
Oh, yay!
But talk
to... Yes, I know. What would you like to do? Yes, my new book, Arch Enemies. It's so weird to have someone say it's out today because that It doesn't feel like it's been such a long wait. They always feel like they've been such a long wait. So Renegades is, as you mentioned, my superhero story. And it's mainly focused on two characters, Adrian and Nova. Nova has been raised by a group of supervillains her whole life, and she has reason to despise this group of superheroes called the Renegades. And the Renegades, they are the elite of this world. They are the protectors of the citizenry and the defenders of justice. But from Nova's perspective, they're doing a lot of things wrong, and she's determined to take them down. But then she meets Adrian, who happens to be the son of her mortal enemies, and he himself is a renegade. And so Nova is able to infiltrate the Renegades. She becomes a spy in their midst with this ultimate goal of destroying them. But her and Adrian start to develop feelings for each other without realizing that their alter egos are becoming arch enemies. And book two, Arch Enemies, plays a lot on that theme of the two of them, you know, fighting these feelings for each other, fighting against their loyalty to their allies and their families, but also trying to figure out what is it that they personally believe in.
So it does sound like the series is also about powerful women.
And we're all powerful.
We're all powerful. But why is it so important to create these characters for teen readers?
You know, I am lucky that I feel like I grew up with a lot of really strong female role models in my life. I don't feel like there are a lot of women that would let them get themselves get walked over, who didn't have a point of view, who weren't willing and able to speak up with their opinions. But I know that that's not always the case. So there are lots of people and young readers who maybe don't have women in their life that they can look to and, you know, see their strength and know that I too can be strong. So I would say that when I'm writing these characters, that's not usually at the forefront of my mind. I'm trying to write characters who are interesting, who are, you know, people that you admire, that you want to follow along in the story, that you want to root for. But when all is said and done, and I'm meeting readers who have really connected with these characters, and I've had so many girls come up to me over the years and tell me how inspired they were by the characters. I've had girls who have told me that they're now studying mechanical engineering because they were inspired by Cinder. And I've had girls tell me that the character's strength encouraged them to get out of abusive relationships. And I've just heard all of these amazing stories of them feeling empowered because they were reading about these empowered characters. So it's not something that I really expected when I started writing and when I went into this career, but it's been a really fulfilling to hear those things.
That's really wonderful. I mean, we talk about how books can save lives and how important they are for young readers, but it must be so thrilling to hear those stories from readers.
For sure. Yeah.
What are you reading right now?
Right now, a book I just started is called Beast Made of Night by, I am not going to be able to pronounce his name correctly, but Tochi Onyebuchi, something like that. and as I said, I've only just begun, but it's a fascinating concept of a fantasy world in which these the lowest of the low in this peasants of this world are given this job of eating the sins of the world's elite. And the sins kind of become these embodied monsters that they have to defeat. And it's a really cool concept, and I'm really excited to see where it goes.
Where can people find you?
Anywhere. People can find me anywhere. Mostly these days, I'm on Instagram. It's definitely my platform of choice. So I can be found at Marissa Meyer Author. I'm also on Facebook and Twitter and Pinterest. Look for me.
Thank you so much for being on. So excited about Arch Enemies. Pick up Renegades, pick up the Lunar Chronicles, and pick up Arch Enemies. We're super psyched about them.
Thank you. I hope you'll enjoy it.
So we're introducing a brand new segment to the podcast. drum roll that doesn't exist, please, for our very the useless male of the week.
Da, 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 da.
So on one hand, I absolutely hate that this individual, that I even know his name, by the way.
Yeah, like, I wish didn't know I could, who he was like 2 days ago.
Right. I wish I could go back to a simpler time, which was before knowing who this person was. And this to this week's useless male of the week is Jacob Wohl, I'm not even calling him an activist because he's not. So I can really, by the way, I really get annoyed when people say right-wing activist because they're not activists. He's not an activist.
He's like a misinformationist.
Right. He's a misinformationist. Anyway, if you don't know who Jacob Wohl is, this tool bucket, which I think is a much better description, is some 20-something-year-old nobody who literally appeared into the zeitgeist out of nowhere, thin air, for being some like big Trump supporter and being young. And he would always apparently tweet about being at some hipster coffee shop in LA and make up like these broad declarations about how, you know, millennials and liberals secretly love Trump and all this crap. He's just another like propagandist. And he apparently writes for one of the all-time worst sites ever, the Gateway Pundit.
Although they've fired him.
Are they fired him now?
Or they parted ways, I think I saw today.
Okay, so that's a new development. I thankfully was not paying attention to him. But I also know, well, here's why he got fired. So Jacob Wohl, who is, his real profession in life is a scammer. He tried to scam and like pretend he was some big hedge fund wunderkind, which he's not, never been. And he basically tried to act like there was some big news coming out against a special investigator or special counsel, sorry, not investigator, special counsel Robert Mueller, who, if you don't know who that is, check yourself and like fix your life. He is the former, he was former FBI, right?
Yes.
And he is leading the investigation into Trump's collusion accusations. And he is the reason why so many of Trump's former close associates, including his former one-time campaign manager, and plenty of others, including Trump's former right-hand man and attorney since forever, are all basically have charges against them. And a couple of them actually have been sentenced.
Mm-hmm.
And Jacob Wohl claimed there were accusations coming out that against Mueller that he sexually harassed women or something. And it turns out they were like making up. It was all a huge grift and
yeah,
a scam.
What was great was that journalists immediately started being like, we got these weird emails from some imaginary woman saying this person offered to pay off her like credit card and student loans and give her $20,000 if she would come out and say that she was sexually harassed or assaulted or whatever. And
but it gets better.
Oh, yeah.
And by better, I mean this is such, for this administration, the perfect crime in the sense that it's so dumb and it gets dumber by the second. So apparently he claimed him and a Republican lobbyist and conspiracy theorist, Jack Berkman, claimed that they were the ones that put out the call for the women with allegations against Mueller and to come forward. And they claimed that they were working with a company called Surefire Intelligence and that it was a very real company. And it Surefire, it turns out, was basically Jacob Wohl, and he took his own image and he put like filters over it and backlit it and used that as the profile image on LinkedIn, and also as like claiming to be whoever the like CEO of this fake company was. And then this gets so much better.
Like, if you wrote this in a book, your editor would be like, this is
the dumbest thing I've ever.
This is too silly. No one will ever believe it.
He also apparently used a picture of Christoph Waltz and other celebrities and made fake LinkedIn profiles and like just put like filters over it, which, by the way, like it's so obvious it's Christoph Waltz, but also like it's so obvious. Like Twitter dragged him the other day for this.
It was amazing. Like the website was registered to his mom's cell phone number or something.
I know, his mom's cell phone. He's just so dumb. So then they held a press conference on Thursday claiming that all of a sudden, surprise, there was no woman with allegations because she, quote unquote, feared for her life. There was just no woman. It was absolute, it was pure fuckery.
One of their, like, flies down the whole time? Like, what?
Right. And proving that this tool bucket is the, like, king of bad decisions. Apparently, Tegan. I always thought it was Tegan, but now I'm second guessing myself. I think it's Tegan. It's Chrissy Teigen. I don't know why. Don't mind me. I'm stuck on stupid today. But apparently she tweeted, can someone please give me a Cliff Notes version of what this Jacob Wall person did? Because my timeline's blowing up. And then he decided to try to, like, get cute. And he replies, oh, I got more famous than you. That's what happened. And he posted a screenshot of a Google... Like, you can check to see
analytics.
How often. Yeah, it's like he compared how often he was searched on Google compared to her. And of course, Chrissy being Chrissy clapped back and was like, yeah, because no one knows who the fuck you are and had to, like, Google you, dumbass. So this kid is, I don't know how he has managed to live this long because he's so stupid that I don't even know how he remembers to, like, turn oxygen into carbon monoxide.
I just can't.
Dioxide. I'm calling him stupid and being stupid in the same breath. It's amazing.
I can't believe that this is not like this. This feels like an SNL sketch of like criminals who can't get their shit together.
Yeah,
I can't get past how on the nose it is and how like absurd because. Literally, if you wrote this into a movie, it would be a slapstick comedy. Like, how is this real life?
But Jacob Wall is our useless male of the week because not only did he can't even be smart enough not to use pictures of celebrities and LinkedIn profiles as imaginary employees, but also, like, fuck you for making a mockery of the Me Too movement and tweeting out believe women because you're such a scumbag. And yeah, I can't wait because the FBI is now investigating him. So you're so useless, Jacob Wall, that you can't even not know not to use your mother's phone number to register a domain, and you're not even smart enough to make your domain registration information private. So, and also because we know your name and who you are now. So that's our very first ever useless mail of the week. So that's all we have for you guys this week. Thank you to Marissa Meyer
for coming by and talking to us about superheroes and princesses.
And as always, you can find us on Twitter and Facebook and Instagram, Sci-Fi Fangirls. Leave us some love on iTunes, you know, 5 stars. Give us some love in the comments. And, you know, by all means, tweet at us who you love as a princess, some of your favorite princesses, or some sexy ghosts that you're into. And you can tweet those to us at I'm at the Sharness.
And I'm at Run with Skizzers.
And until then,
speak geek like a girl.